Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, it's good to have everybody back. And so we're going to start. We're beginning week three of the lockdown. I put lockdown in quotation marks because I went to the hardware store today, and only to find that it was closed. But we'll go immediately into the widespread panic file, where it is now being reported by CBS in New York that Harvey Weinstein never had coronavirus and he never tested positive for coronavirus. He tested negative for coronavirus, Harvey Weinstein. So we all can breathe a sigh of relief, I suppose. No, let me be the first person in the media to question whether or not Fredo Cuomo actually has tested positive. Just only because he lies about everything else. Otherwise, I might give him the benefit of the doubt, but in this case, I am not going to do so. Fredo, show me the test. I don't believe you. No. All right. Boris Johnson, on the other hand, does have coronavirus. He did test positive. And what happened today? He went into the hospital today? Or he's gone to see the doctor? What's?
I just saw the headline.
Saw the headline. Not that it. Maybe they'll send him to a grooming class if he recovers. And we don't want Boris to get sick. We just wish he would learn to comb his hair.
He needs to learn. That's all. Hygiene.
Yeah, just some basic hygiene, Boris. you might have avoided catching the bug if you washed your hands more. Anyway, but we do hope Boris recovers completely. And Fredo Cuomo, well, he probably won't get sick because chances are he's just making all that up. All right. So, folks, it's going to be a bad couple of weeks. It's going to be a bad couple of weeks. It'll be a lot worse for you to start counting the bodies of the other three leading causes of death, which we are not being, fed every day like we are with this particular bug. Can you imagine how depressed you would be if you tracked every day everyone who died of heart disease, cancer, and preventable injury? Those are the three leading deaths in America. And over the next 2 weeks, approximately 26,000 people will die of heart disease, 22,000 will die of cancer, and almost 7,000 will die of preventable injuries. Can you imagine if the news media followed all three of those and posted every day in big bloody letters all the death and destruction? About 55,000 people die in any given two-week period in America. So just don't do it. Don't start tracking these or you might freak yourself out. Okay, so now that the dust has settled a little bit and the data is starting to come in and we're starting to be able to wrap our minds around how big and how bad this whole COVID-19 pandemic may be, I just want to address what I think happened, my humble analysis. So I think that this bug jumped into humans either from accidental through eating or some other nefarious interaction between a person and a bat. Don't even want to get into what that might be. Or it's quite possible that this bug escaped from a Chinese lab. Now, not that it was created in a lab, but they were studying it in a lab and they accidentally let it out. Why do I think that? Well, that's happened before. That happened with SARS. So, and then China lied about it. China and the WHO lied about the virus, its transmissibility, its virulence. They lied about everything. And so they created a big unknown in the minds of a lot of very cowardly people, mainly politicians and people in the media. And then China locked down Wuhan province. For the first time in all of human history, a state locked 8 million people in their house. Just like you would expect a communist dictatorship caught in a vast lie to do. That's what communist dictatorships do. And so I think that our weak need leadership in politics and in the media. I thought maybe China knows something that we don't about this virus. Maybe they're not telling us something. Maybe this thing is really, really bad. And we know they're lying about it. And so then, instead of taking the common sense steps we've taken against every pandemic ever for all of human history, the world copied the tactics of the communist dictators in China and now have locked down the whole world. Why did we choose to copy the communist dictators in China rather than doing the common sense things we've always done? Like closing the borders, like testing, like quarantining the sick, and using common sense measures to protect the elderly, maybe canceling large gatherings. I can roll with that. Canceling big conventions, sports, things that we don't absolutely have to do for a little while. Anyway, why did we choose to copy the communist dictators in China rather than doing what we've always done? And there's no other answer except that Donald Trump is in the White House and this was used as an opportunity to get him out. That's all. And we'll move on to other stuff. Well, actually, we can't move on to much other stuff. But let's move into the widespread happiness and joy file. That's right. It's a new file here in the midst of the pandemic. Widespread happiness and joy. Yes. Let's see. The polling firm. Who is this? This is Gallup. The Gallup polling firm has surveyed adults during the quarantine, and 9 in 10 parents of children say their children experienced enjoyment and happiness during a lot of the day during this lockdown. So all the U.S., all the children in America are at home with mom and dad, or they're at home with mom and or dad. Is that right? Yeah, I guess that covers everybody. And the kids like it. They don't like being shipped off to a government school factory every day and separated from their parents and educated by someone else. They like being home, and they're experiencing happiness and enjoyment, which includes the word joy. They're experiencing joy. That's right. Stress and worry, when asked about that, that was mostly confined to the parents. About 40% higher levels of stress, anxiety. Let's see, we got stress, anger, sadness, loneliness, worry. And that's to be expected because, you know, adults, that's what we do. We stress on things that kids don't stress on. Anyway, and we should stress because we've basically collapsed the global economy over fear of a cold bug. And that threatens our posterity, certainly more than COVID-19, in my opinion. And time will bear that out. Anyway, I'm happy all the kids are home, and I'm happy they're experiencing enjoyment and happiness, 90% of them. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And you know, one benefit of this whole fiasco could be that hundreds, maybe thousands, maybe tens of thousands of parents find out that they can educate their own kids. And maybe there'll be something of a measurable exodus from the godless government schools over the course of the next year or so. That would be a nice silver lining to the long dark cloud. All right. Now we go to the back to the widespread panic file, where you remember Natasha Ott. Natasha Ott was the woman. She was found dead in her kitchen on March 20th. And while she was awaiting the results of her COVID-19 test. And I remember this story because it stayed at the top of the news cycle for a day or two. Because, well, if you heard Don Lemon tell it, it's as if Donald Trump flew to her hometown and prevented her from getting the results until she died of the COVID-19 right there in her kitchen. Donald Trump, in fact, Donald Trump may have been in her kitchen at the time, the way the news media reported it. They blamed the government's screw-up of the testing, which there's no doubt there was definitely a giant error, or a bureaucratic snafu, as it's called, and the CDC wanted to make their own tests, and then they found out that they're really just a bunch of bureaucrats. They don't even know what they're doing. Why are we funding the CDC? By the way, this is absolutely what they're for, and they were the biggest problem. They had to get out of the way, and let other researchers and private industry start working on this thing. So yes, there was. So anyway, it's reported that this poor woman died because Donald Trump messed up the testing at the beginning of all this. Well, it turns out a second test came back negative. So she didn't have COVID-19. She died of something else. As we go to air, they don't exactly know why she died, but we do know that Donald Trump did not kill her by preventing her from getting her test results, as was widely reported, or at least implied, in the mainstream medstream media.
All right.
Had she gotten her results and died anyway, would it have made...
Would they have a cure for her?
No, they would not have a cure for her, but they may have had a treatment. Well, they do have treatments. I'm going to get to some of that, by the way. Now we get it.
At that time?
March 20th, not much. No, that would have been difficult. You are correct. There may have been nothing they could do, but the bottom line was Donald Trump didn't give her results. That was the reportage, you see. We move from widespread panic into the widespread knowledge file. Dr. Stephen Smith, according to, I really hate quoting from the Gateway Pundit, but, well, there you go. According to the Gateway Pundit, Dr. Stephen Smith, he's been treating coronavirus patients at the Smith Center for Infectious Disease in East Orange, New Jersey, so he's something of an expert. The Center for Infectious Disease and Urban Health is named after him, I think. Or he owns it. Maybe it's a private practice. Anyway, he's been treating a lot of COVID-19 patients, and he says that in his treatment, he has not seen a single patient under the age of 70 who was not a diabetic, pre-diabetic, or obese, and not a single coronavirus patient under his care who was on the hydroxychloroquine regimen needed to be intubated. And he says the widespread use of hydroxychloroquine, he calls it the beginning of the end of the pandemic, which it's just encouraging to hear something like that, because just to get to the beginning of the end of this would be a milestone worthy of note, and hopefully we are there. Anyway, another silver lining. We may revolutionize the treatment of infectious disease, because the government... America's government and other governments all over the world have finally been forced to focus on one of their few just functions. For once, they're focused on something they should be doing, like public health and research the way it should be done against real dangerous diseases. Instead of handing out abortion pills and methadone, they're actually working to fight against actual infectious diseases that actually threaten the lives of millions of people, which is what the government should be doing. And so maybe they'll get it right with this wartime footing they've put us on. You know, more medical advances are made in wartime than at any other time. That's generally been true over the course of history. And so we may very well come up with treatments against viral infections and other infectious disease, even by accident, because the government's finally doing what they're supposed to do. That's what it takes. It takes a crisis to get the government to stop doing all this other stupid stuff that they do all the time that they shouldn't be doing, to get them to focus on a just function. All right, and from there we go into the science really file. And now this is real science, but there's just a portion of it that makes me think, science, really? And this, we go to Dr. Jacob Glanville. Jacob Glanville works for a company called Distributed Bio, and he was one of the doctors featured in a Netflix show called Pandemic, which I've heard a lot about. I haven't seen it. Well, his team has been working around the clock, trying to come up with a drug to treat COVID-19, and he believes they found one. He says they have some very potent antibodies that can be effective against the virus. Where did they get these antibodies, you may ask? Well, here he says, we took a series of 5 antibodies from around 2002 that were able to neutralize SARS. And we were able to use technology in our laboratories to evolve those antibodies against SARS to adapt them to recognize COVID-19. All right, so this is where I have a little bit of a problem. Here is a medical researcher using all the power of his mind and his team to architect and engineer these antibodies against SARS, and he says he's evolving them. Anyway, what he's doing is he's mutating, he's engineering. He's not, that's not, but you know, a whole generation of scientists has been taught to look at biology through the twisted, distorted lens of evolution. And so even the guys in the best position to save us are looking at this from the wrong perspective, and that's part of why we find ourselves in the fix we're in right now. Gotta come back. That's right, with the hand claps. That's it, folks. The evolutionary mindset has retarded scientific advancements for the latter half of the 19th and the entire 20th century, and now the first couple of decades of the 21st century. And one of the reasons these infectious diseases are such a threat against us is because the scientists have had their minds retarded by evolution. That's why. They're not looking at problems through the clear lens of a creation that was very good that broke and fell and needs to be fixed and was very well engineered, that didn't cobble itself together accidentally ad hoc. Anyway, that's what's happened. Now remember though, this fellow, what's his name here, Dr. Jacob Glanville. I saw him on TV. He's a very impressive fellow, I must say, because I looked at the story initially with healthy skepticism, because this is a private company, and we've already heard of fake cures being announced by fake companies, real companies, fake researchers, real researchers trying to drive up their stock price. It's all happened, right? And it's to be expected. But after I saw this guy on TV, and he talked about, he used the term targeted antibodies, which is, it's the first time I've heard anyone use that term in this particular vein. And anyway, this guy sounds like someone my pastor interviewed 3 or 4 years ago about targeted antibodies, which we've been talking about, and the folks over at Real Science Radio have been talking about for a number of years. Anyways, he says all 5 of the antibodies they engineered, I will not use the word evolved, all 5 of the antibodies we engineered worked. So we have a pretty powerful tool chest available to us right now to produce a final therapeutic drug. He says, we've been deliberately trying to engineer extremely potent antibodies. So do you see that? Deliberately trying to engineer? That you can't say evolution then, if you say deliberately trying to engineer. Because deliberately trying to engineer implies that there's an engineer. And evolution implies just the opposite. So stop using bad terminology, doctor, but thank you for the fine work you're doing. All right, I'm happy to correct you where you need correction, but I know you're a lot smarter than I am. At least book smart. Okay. Oh, he says, now, and this is what really, and I didn't understand this when I read it, but when I saw the interview, I did understand. He's now sending his antibodies to the military for confirmation testing. So he's going to send his antibodies out to the military and another lab. So independent third parties disinterested in his private company, who will confirm or refute his assertions that his targeted antibodies can be an effective treatment for COVID-19. So that's exciting to hear, because there's only a few things that can take the power away from the power mad politicians who have hijacked the entire planet away from the free people. And that's when the curve flattens and infection rates start going down and we start finding effective treatments, then the media and the insane politicians are going to lose their ability to scare everyone so bad that we let them get away with what they've gotten away with, which is frankly unbelievable and embarrassing. I'll get back to that later. We go from there to the live free or die file, where at last report, 9 states were... Listen to how Newsmax reports this. Their headline says, 9 states hold out against stay-at-home orders. That's just not the way I would put the headline. I would just state 9 states have not imposed stay-at-home orders. That's neutral and a fair way to report the facts. But to say they're holding out, I mean, that to me, that headline implies that we should resent them for this. I applaud them for this. Arkansas, Iowa, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Utah, and Wyoming have avoided the childish, panic-stricken desire to lock down their societies and grind their economies to a halt. And for some reason, Newsmax seems like they want us to resent them. Anyway, I've got a quote from Kim Reynolds, who I don't know who she is. She's the governor of Iowa. Don't know her political background. Never heard of her before. Probably disagree with her on 99.986% of everything she's ever said or done. But she says a shelter-in-place order will... What will it do? Well, it will disrupt the supply chains. It puts additional pressure on the essential workforce, making sure that we are consider... And we need to consider... How do we bring that back up again? How do we grind the economy to a halt, stop everything, and then how do we fix that? We've never done that before. Maybe we should think about this before we do that. Instead of just blindly following Xi Jinping and Xi Jinping Cuomo over there in New York and Mao Zedong out in California. And if Colorado had a governor, I'd mention him too. But he's unmentionable. All right. By the way, the governor of Iowa is not wearing a tinfoil hat and denying that the virus exists. She has ordered non-essential businesses to remain closed until April 7th, and they closed all the schools in Iowa until April 15th. Praise the Lord. That's great news. All right. So so now if these states hold out and don't succumb to the pressure and freak out like everybody else, I think we'll have some good data that we'll be able to use to analyze whether or not all this insanity, these lockdowns, were necessary, if they actually made any difference. Because these states should experience observably more significant numbers of new infections in a period of time when other states should start to see declines. I think. I mean, I'm not a mathematician. I'm not an epidemiologist. But some people smarter than me in those fields should be able to look at these states and look at all the insane states and decide who's crazy and who kept their wits about them when all around them lost theirs. All right. Now, this brought up the discussion between me and my extremely attractive audio engineer about what is a non-essential business. What is that? A non-essential business. Well, we determined that there are very few non-essential businesses. But at the top of the list are tattoo and body piercing shops. those are non-essential. In fact, there is a tattoo shop in our town that has a marquee out in front, and it says free roll of toilet paper with every tattoo.
That was
kind of funny. So tattoo and body piercing, non-essential. Pot shops, abortion clinics, right? Anything else? Trying to think of anything else that's non-essential. There's not that much.
Hobby Lobby.
Hobby Lobby and Michaels. Probably we could live without those. But no, really, though, I wouldn't count those as... Because, you know, you lock people in their houses and people start going crazy. They need hobbies and stuff. Okay. So I would...
Tattoo,
that's pretty... Pot shops and abortion clinics. You might could add Qdoba. Or what's the other one? I can't even remember the one that we hate. What's it called? Chipotle.
Oh, yeah.
Chipotle or Qdoba. Either one of those. No, they're essential. Come on, restaurants. Restaurants feed people. They're all essential. We're just having a little bit of fun with them.
Gay bars.
And then, oh, yeah, gay bars. By the way, I did not know this. Did you know that Anthony Fauci was in charge of the AIDS epidemic? Now, I wonder why we didn't do this during the AIDS epidemic, because AIDS had a fatality rate in the, really high. It was hard to catch, but boy, if you got it, you it was practically a death sentence, I remember, in the late 1980s, early 1990s. How come Fauci didn't lock the whole... He didn't even close the gay bars during the... All right, and he's in charge of this? So I'm just saying it's possible that they could be getting this really, really wrong, or at least just a massive overreaction that's of little value, of little clinical value in stopping the spread of COVID. But anyway, the live free or die file, I think that is dead. Because people are like, live scared, or I'll do anything. Just help. Forget live free or die. Remember that? If I remember correctly, that's still the motto of a state. I think New Hampshire, is it New Hampshire? Or Vermont, one of the two. Live free or die. Anyway, I'll return to that subject here in a little bit because I've got some news. There is news that's not associated with the killer virus. And don't get me wrong, I know it's a killer virus. It's killed people who shouldn't have died and who wouldn't have died from a normal cold. I know that. All right, let me get to the news here. From the Justice File, this is from ABC News in Crittenden County, and I don't know what state, on Horseshoe Lake. I still don't know. Well, that's something I should have written down, but it's in America, okay? Authorities found the body of 63-year-old Martha McKay inside of her house, and the alleged murderer of Martha McKay, his body was recovered from a nearby lake after a police pursuit in which they chased this guy into the lake, and he apparently drowned there. Well, not apparently. They fished him out of there dead. So he murdered this woman, tried to evade the police, ended up drowning in a lake. Police have identified the alleged killer as 39-year-old Travis Lewis, who was on parole and has been on parole since 2018 for the 1996 murder of Martha McKay's own mother and another relative in the same house. That's right. This murderer was 16 years old at the time that he murdered Martha McKay's mother and another family member in the same house 23 years ago. Wow. He was allowed to live. Everyone associated with this man being released should be arrested and put on trial as an accessory to murder. In a just society, that would happen. Oh, by the way, speaking of a just society, if America collapses, if it all comes down like the left has wanted it to for so long so that they could implement their insane leftist socialist ideas, if it all comes down at the end of it, after all the Mad Max and everybody with the tattooed faces and the machine guns and the swords, and once it all settles down and the dust settles, I just want you people to know that I and my circle of friends have a constitution ready and waiting. We have a new constitution for America. We've had it since this would be the mid-1990s, I think. We've had it ready. We've been working on it, tweaking it. It's ready. So don't worry about the government. We've got that covered, okay? But we have enough guns and ammo to get through the whole Mad Max period, we think. We'll see. I don't plan to do that, as you know. I plan to get by strictly based on charm when it all comes down like that. That's what I plan to do. All right. Okay. But now back to this. So a 16-year-old murders two people. Forget Mad Max. Let's look at where we are right now in America. Our criminally insane governmental leaders are so horribly evil and wicked that they would allow a 16-year-old man to murder two people and then allow him to live. He's been duly convicted of murder. It's been appealed. He should be put to death. He should have been put to death for what he did. He wasn't. And I don't know if he was sentenced to life back then, but you know what life means. That means there's a good chance you'll get out. And he did get out. This is just astonishing. It's stunning that we've allowed... Perhaps at this time when we all stop and actually think about things and look at what is happening with our government and who they are and what they've done, perhaps it will be revealed to us who exactly has blood on their hands, why that's the case, and how we change that. That's a scream right out of Mad Max right there. Sound like he was being chased by one of those pickup trucks with guns hanging off the side.
The Chuck Schumer.
What is the deal with Chuck Schumer? He looks more and more like the embodiment of Satan every day. Seriously, is he growing horns out of... I see like little bulges right above his eyebrows there, up in the bald part there. And his nose just gets sharper and sharper, and his eyes are slantier and slittier, and his teeth are kind of coming to a sharp point. It's just a weird transformation that's happening with Chuck. Somebody should get him to a doctor. All right, speaking of Satan, I've got a story here about Gavin Newsom. Speaking of Satan, Gavin Newsom out in California commuted the sentences of 21 state prison inmates, including more than a dozen convicted of murder. Wow. Murder, I said. Included in the list of victims were children and at least one pregnant woman were murdered by some of the people who Gavin Newsom commuted their sentence today. He said he was considering commuting these sentences even before the coronavirus crisis occurred. And as resources permitted, he says, or his office says, the governor decided to move forward with them, said his spokeswoman, Vicky. Attorneys representing inmates this past week, asked federal judges to free thousands of inmates to help prisons better confront the pandemic. Every lawyer and his brother are going before judges and asking that their clients be released on humanitarian grounds. So there's going to be a flood of criminals coming out of the prisons because we're, I'm not scared, but you know what I mean. We are so scared that we're doing things that are just irrational, not helpful, counterproductive. It's just unbelievable that Gavin Newsom will be allowed to do this. And then to see that. So I'm flipping through the channels the other night and I see what I think is John Ramsey. The father of JonBenet Ramsey, if you remember the story from the mid-1990s. JonBenet Ramsey was murdered on Christmas Eve, was it? It was a Christmas Day? Anyway, she was murdered in her house. And according to the mainstream media, nobody knows who killed her. Well, now, when it's obvious that her parents killed her, one or both of her parents killed her, it's very obvious to anyone with half a brain. Well, now there's a show on A&E TV where Elizabeth Vargas, listen, this is A&E's promo. Elizabeth Vargas takes a fresh look at the most notorious cold case murder in American history by tracking down new leads with new DNA tests. Take a deeper dive to bringing peace to the Ramsey family. Featuring an exclusive interview with John Ramsey. And that's what I saw. It was like one of these ghost shows. Are you familiar with these ghost shows that they have on? Yeah, the ghost show. This is the equivalent of one of those ghost story shows that they have on cable, where you get the bumps in the night and the shadows and the weird sounds and amorphous clues about something lurking just beyond your ability to perceive it. And there's John Ramsey on helping look for his daughter's killer. It was just, it was eerie and weird to me. A&E is going to track down numerous intruder theories. So they're going to make an entertainment series out of entertaining fantastical theories about who could have murdered JonBenet Ramsey. They will also, this week they'll be investigating the, this is from last week. I apologize. I don't want to mislead anyone who might be setting their DVR. Last week they investigated the possibility that the killer may have had ties to a group that believed in extraterrestrial life and the end of the world. And John Ramsey said, yes, that could be. Let's go investigate that. Oh my God. It could have been them, said John Ramsey. We reached out to A&E to see if they were in negotiations with O.J. Simpson to find the real killer of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, but we have not gotten a call back yet. That may be in development as we speak. All right. Now, back to this pandemic and the surrounding freak out of historic civilizational proportion that's occurring right now. I've had a little time to think about this, and I would just say don't underestimate the desire for fame and power to motivate our political leaders and their bureaucrats to try to convince us that this is their Pearl Harbor or their 9/11. I've been hearing that now this week, this past week. This is a Pearl Harbor moment. This is our 9/11. So they want to tell us it's our Pearl Harbor or our 9/11. But I suspect they really want it to be their Pearl Harbor, their 9/11, the type of event upon which a political career can be built or amplified or extended for indefinite periods of time. The two mouthpieces for Trump, I can't remember their names. There's a female doctor and a male doctor. The guy who crashed the a fight of the AIDS epidemic, Tony Fauci, and the other doctor. You know, a few months ago, nobody even knew these people's names. Nobody who knew who they were. And now them and Trump and Cuomo and every other two-bit politician to get to put on a daily political ad. And they get to be famous. They get to be on TV every day. And they do all this while they have a captive audience. An audience that would typically ignore 99.986% of everything these shameless cowards say or do. Nobody would pay attention to them. But now they've got their stage. Fauci came out and said we might need to lock down through May. Why? So you can be on TV? It's just ludicrous. I personally don't think it's humanly possible to lock us down through April. I think that's insane. But folks, the virus is out there. This is another thing that I haven't heard talked about enough, and maybe I'm missing something. The virus is out. It cannot be contained. The genie is out of the bottle. The lockdown is not going to put that genie back in the bottle. It's a cold bug. It's a cold virus, and it's out there now. So we're all going to get it. We're all going to have to catch it. This cold season, next cold season, eventually everybody's going to have to get this thing. And yes, some of us are going to die. And that's sad. And we should do everything we can within reason to protect ourselves and our neighbors. But might I posit the theory that this is not reasonable? Locking down society and stopping all commerce? I shouldn't say all commerce, that's hyperbole. But stopping, upending the economy, crashing the economy, putting millions of people out of work. There are a lot of people who live paycheck to paycheck who are not going to recover from this. It may take years and a decade or more for some people, some small companies, to recover from this. This damage that's being done is real. It's real quantifiable damage. It's not an unknown. It's known. And it's catastrophic what they're doing. This is not reasonable. And by the way, another thing that just doesn't connect for me is that pandemics are not new. Pandemics are nothing new. We've been through this before. I just talked about SARS. I just talked about the AIDS epidemic. the bird flu, the Zika, the, you name it. About every 5 or 10 years or so, we get one of these new bugs. We've been through this before, people. We've just never had such a massive wave of fear overtop the levees that restrain the reservoir of common sense and bravery that has always been sufficient to get us through things like this before. And my biggest concern for the future of civilization is that that reservoir may now be empty. We might not have it anymore. You know, a generation that's 3 and 4 times now removed from the confidence and the bravery that is possible when you know and walk with the living God, that generation may not be able to recover anything like what we had before. They might all just end up too scared to carry on like before. And so, well, I think we've definitely lost something that will never be recaptured. There's something lost here. This can't happen without some permanent, you know, some things break and they can't be fixed. And I think that's where we are. And of course, a generation 3 and 4 times removed from God, scared, terrified, broke. Then the wolves are circling and the sharks, they smell the blood in the water. And I'm talking about ambitious men with bad intent. And because of, for fear of a cold bug, this time, the past few hundred years, this brief, extraordinary time in human history, during which so much of humanity was allowed to breathe free and to serve God and to serve one another as free people, and has lifted so many people out of poverty and fear and despotism and filth. Well, this brief, extraordinary time may just come to a dim and inglorious end with a whimper. Not a crash, not Mad Max, not war in the streets, not grab your AR-15 and let's defend the homestead. Not that. Just a sad, pathetic, dim, whimpering, whining nader. And then the nakedly wicked, like they have from the dawn of history, will take everything from us that God gave us. Everything that God allowed us to have and to build and to trade and to give to our children, the nakedly wicked will take it just like they always have. And that's my greatest fear. And I hope that you and I, this audience, we will stare steadfastly into whatever it is that awaits out there in the unknown. And that we will seek that reservoir of good common sense and bravery that God gave us. And we'll see each other with broad smiles on the other side. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Welcome back, folks. Where we're here and we're doing fine. Fine. Now we go to the Wolves and Sharks file because I just referenced the Wolves and the Sharks. And the United Nations is calling for an international response, and they want at least 10% of the global gross domestic product. That's right. That they're gonna. It's now their turn to start grabbing money while there's still some left. And they tell us over there at the UN, there is no time to lose. That's whenever a politician says there's no time to lose. I mean, unless you smell gunpowder, I mean, be very suspicious. Yeah. We must defeat the virus and build a better world. Okay, hold on. How about you stop at defeat the virus? How about that? Because I've already seen the world you want to build, and I'm not interested in helping you build it. And I'm not interested in giving Secretary General Antonio Guterres 10% of my stuff to build a better world. So Secretary General there, Antonio, says the prospects for the world are dire. The virus, that WorldNet Daily says, the Chinese virus, I like that. The Chinese virus is, quote, now they're quoting Antonio 10% again, quote, the greatest test that we have faced together since the formation of the United Nations. Really? Ah, come on, man. You know, we're not all 13. You know, we're not all, who's the little scared girl running around, Thunberg, Greta? We're not all Greta Thunberg, you idiot. You're not going to scare all of us into giving you 10% of our stuff to a bunch of communist, baby-killing, homosexualist freaks. Let's see, what does he want to do to defeat the virus? He wants health and unemployment insurance and social protections. Does that mean like face shields and masks? That's not what he's talking about, no. And then, of course, he wants debt alleviation for the... That'll help with the virus. What else here? He says, to fully mobilize a trust fund for COVID-19 would require at least 10% of the global gross domestic product. All right. Please. Fortunately, this guy has no means to take 10% of our stuff, because he would have already done that if he had the means. But believe you me, there are men of evil intent who would take advantage of this situation to take as much of our stuff as they can, all under the guise of defeating the virus. I had a note here. Where is it here? Maybe I'll get to it here. Oh, yeah, more coronavirus news from the widespread panic file. China's top virologist on bat-borne viruses is one Shi Zhengli. And she has been studying viruses in bats for a number of years. And that's important work, folks, by the way. We need to be looking at these viruses and seeing how is it that they mutate. We should be able to get ahead of this if the government would pay attention and do what they're supposed to be doing instead of handing out paychecks to malingerers and single mothers. They should be getting ahead of these viruses. And so the Chinese have a lab. They're looking at viruses in bats. And she's one of the leading people. And she said, she had previously said that she lost sleep worrying about the possibility that her lab in Wuhan could have been responsible for the virus's release. Deadly viruses have a history of escaping from Chinese labs. As I said, this article from the Daily Caller talks about how SARS escaped twice. China also has a history of lying about it. We know that. One of the first doctors in Wuhan to raise the alarm was detained by police in December. And then later, that's Li Wenliang. He later died, allegedly, from coronavirus in February. Don't know how he died, but he's dead. And the Chinese government was mad at him. And the Chinese government being mad at you and you being dead quite often go together, whether there's a virus or not. Well, now Richard Ebright, professor of chemical biology at Rutgers, says there is a real possibility that the virus entered the human population due to a laboratory accident. Shi Zhengli, the researcher who was looking at the bat viruses, even though she said that she had lost sleep about it, now she says, no, it didn't come from my lab. Here's what she says. This is nature punishing the human race for keeping uncivilized living habits. That's what a Chinese bat virus researcher. So anyway, there's a pretty good chance that this is an accidental release by an incompetent socialist communist government. But and they need to be held accountable. I'll just leave it at that. Let's go now to Gavin Newsom from the criminally insane file. Yeah. March 19th, Gavin issued a mandatory shelter at home order to 40 million people. Can you imagine the rush this egomaniac gets knowing that he's making 40 million people do something? He gets a chill up his leg, I'm sure. Now he's predicting that the order could extend into June. Into June, says Gavin Newsom. When did he say this? During one of his live daily video press updates, where he gets to be famous. They put the makeup on with the pancake. They get him all dolled up and put him in front of the camera. Reporters are not allowed to attend the governor's press briefings because they might ask him uncomfortable questions. Oh, and because of the social distancing. That's it. We can't have reporters in the room because I don't want to get anybody sick. Uh-huh, sure, Gov. So reporters call in with questions, which certainly couldn't be screened or no. That's Bloomberg News asked Governor Newsom, do you see the potential, as many others in the Democrat Party do, for a new progressive era, an opportunity for additional progressive steps? And Gavin's, the short version of Gavin's answer was yes. There is opportunity, he said, for reimagining a progressive era as it pertains to capitalism. Capitalism? So you're going to use this pandemic to insult capitalism? Just unbelievable. He says, yes, absolutely. We see this as an opportunity to reshape the way we do business and how we govern. All right. The sharks and the wolves, right? By the way, California, at the time we went to press, had a little over 200 deaths. In a state where direct flights from Wuhan only stopped in January, and the virus, by the way, may have escaped into the Chinese population, however it got there. It may have escaped as early as October. So California should, relatively speaking, be a bloodbath compared to everywhere else. I mean, it should be, because we had more Chinese coming in and out here than anybody else. All right. Meanwhile, Arnold Schwarzenegger's idiot's daughter, who has no credentials as anything except she's Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter. Otherwise, why would anyone listen to her? And why even then, I don't know. But she has the ear of, who is it here? Oh, Gavin Newsom. She pointed out, she tweeted her concern about the farmers markets open in L.A. County. You know, where people walk around to tents outside, staying 6 to 30 to 75 feet away from each other, and they buy eggs and vegetables and fruit and turkey legs and whatever else. Well, she tweeted that scared her. She said, the farmers markets in Brentwood are still being open. It seems like a huge issue when it comes to social gatherings. I'm so scared.
Just don't go.
Yeah, just to, I'm sorry, it's not Gavin Newsom. It's Fredo Garcetti. He wet his pants immediately. 2 days later, he ordered the farmers markets closed. He suspended them and based it on the coronavirus epidemic. My extremely attractive audio engineer and I have gone to the farmer's market the last two Saturdays. Why? Because we can. No, it's not illegal. No, we went there to get food, and we bought food, folks. We filled our truck with food.
No, they see my closet.
I guess we don't want to say it too loud. Fortunately, pants wetting Gil Garcetti and Catherine and Arnold Schwarzenegger do not listen to the Weekly Worldview. They've been banned. We've ordered them socially distanced from us. If they try to download the podcast, it knows. And instead, it gives them a feed of Don Lemon at a bar. All right. Let's see here. Oh, listen to what Gil Garcetti said as he wet his pants. We have seen images of dangerously crowded farmers markets. So the markets can stay open this week, because I don't care if people die this week. But next week, they're done. That's actually what he said. I mean, there's a little bit of editorial liberty taken there, but he actually said the markets can stay open this week, you know, because I want to kill a few senior citizens. But after that, I'm closing them down because I care about human life. Folks, I want to make another prediction. A songwriter once said, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. And I'm telling you what's going to happen after the curve flattens here in a few weeks, and the panic starts to subside, and we all look around and try to wonder who's going to be held accountable for the destruction of our economy. And not just that either. The severe impact on the mental health of a lot of people. Who are we going to hold responsible? Well, there will be no one to be held responsible, because it's just like when you watch the local weather and they come on and they show that it's going to be sunny and warm for the next 10 days. And then 3 days later, they say, well, it's going to start getting cold tomorrow and then it's going to rain for a week. And they never say, by the way, I'm really sorry about what I said about the 10 days of sun. I was wrong on that. I'll try to do better next time. They never do that. They just move right on as if nothing happened. There's nothing to see here, folks. Just keep walking. Just keep walking. Try to avoid the puddles. But just keep walking. Well, I don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. And I know that I am not going to allow these criminal politicians and celebrities and members of the mainstream media to act like it was this insane lockdown that saved us all from the pandemic being so much worse than we thought it was going to be, or that made it so much better than we thought it was going to be, which I think the numbers are beginning to indicate that this is not going to be a pandemic as extreme as was. And there are good common sense things that we're doing to stop it. Right? Self-quarantine if you're sick. Protect the elderly. Go shopping for them. Don't let them go out. Wash your hands. Social distancing, I suppose. Cancel the convention. Sure. Cancel the baseball games and the football games. Whatever. Yeah, all that stuff is good. But I'm not going to let them get away with claiming that this wholesale capitulation to fear and panic is what did it. When you're fighting, and by the way, for all you politicians, you filthy, vile, disgusting, hypocritical, baby-killing liars, for you to compare this to World War II, first of all, you insult my intelligence, but since you're doing it, I will remind you that when fighting a war, the goal cannot be to minimize casualties. That cannot be the goal. The goal has to be to win the war, understanding that there will be casualties that you want to keep to a minimum. But the goal cannot be just to minimize casualties. But Doug, we're fighting a virus. This is the invisible enemy. Isn't minimizing casualties winning? No, that's not winning. That's very short-sighted. Winning is developing, well, first of all, winning is not succumbing to fear and panic. That's the first thing. And then winning means defeating the virus without collapsing civilization out of fear and political opportunism. Not being duped by politicians and celebrities into thinking this is the end of everything. And then winning means to develop treatments. And finally, folks, and as much as you might not want to hear this, we're all in this already. Winning is going to mean developing that herd immunity that happens once enough of us get this thing and get over it. And yes, some people are going to die, and that's sad. But that's no reason to collapse 5,000 years of human activity for fear of a cold bug. All right. Have I made my point clearly, to be grammatically correct, which I like to do? I got a story about Joe Biden, but I realize now it just doesn't matter, so I'm going to set it aside. And instead, I'm going to go briefly back into the science, really, file, where researchers said they have found, under Antarctica, they have found the remains of basically a jungle. They call it a rainforest, and they've determined that it was a rainforest based on fossil roots, pollen, and spores, discovered there deep under the ice, 558 feet under the ice. They've taken core samples and they say, based on that, they say 90 million years ago, Antarctica was a lush rainforest. 90 million years. So I somehow they have a calculator that proves to them that 558 feet equals 90 million years. Not sure where they got that. Maybe they got it at Radio Shack. Anyway, they say that the rainforest remains were discovered on the ice in a sediment core collected from a seabed near Pine Island Glacier, West Antarctica, back in 2017. And I don't deny it, and I think it's completely true, plausible, and absolutely, if these core samples are accurate, this is irrefutable that the polar regions at one time supported much more lush vegetation and all that. But these scientists say that this shows how potent greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide can cause temperatures to skyrocket. The temperatures skyrocketed back then. They get all hyperventilating about it. Folks, all this really indicates is that at one time, parts of the Earth that are now the polar ice caps were not there. They were the globe moved. And there's a whole theory behind that, and it's extremely scientifically well researched, and it's relatively easy to understand, and it all relates back to biblical creation and the global flood. And I can't get into it all now, but I will put a link up to Walt Brown's website on the blog, so that if you want to see why it is that Antarctica and other areas at some point in the past had much more lush environs, you will be able to do that. And then I hear a story. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can do this story, but I think I'll have to do it as we go out because I may not make it through this story. And this story is a couple years old. Not a couple years old. This story is over 3 years old, but I just found it. I was reading another story from the Federalist about the World Health Organization and how they lied for China. But I think we all know that, and I think to do that story would be just repetition of what you already got from other sources. So I'll do this story that I missed this story when it came out, or I would have done it. A young couple named Brittany and Ian McIntyre, they were expecting twins. And like so many parents do, they actually named the twins while they were still in utero, Mason and Madeline. Well, at one point during the pregnancy, they learned that one of the babies wasn't developing as well as the other. Mason, the boy, he weighed just 9 ounces and he had a hole in his heart. He had an abnormal brain. Madeline, his sister, on the other hand, was developing normally, and she was at about 2 pounds when this story went to press. And then there's a picture. There's a picture of an ultrasound. And in the picture, which I'll post up on the blog, the doctors captured tiny unborn baby Mason gripping his sister's hand. The ultrasound technician told the parents that it seemed like big sister Madeline was protecting her little brother. Anyway, Mason did pass on. And Madeline was born in October of 2016. She's going on 4 years old. Anyway, I'll post up this picture. Because it just reminds me that these are people. And, you know, the little boy was scared and he was dying. And so he reached out to another person. And anyway, cheer up and keep a stiff upper lip because these two will meet again, right? They'll meet again someday. And so that's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, May the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.